Imagine yourself transported back in time to a green hill in Galilee over 2,000 years ago. The sun shines brightly, warming the land and illuminating the vibrant green grass under your feet. A gentle breeze touches your face, bringing with it whispers of ancient times and imminent changes. Before you stands a simple man, devoid of the attire of a powerful leader or the garments of a renowned philosopher. His name, Jesus of Nazareth, the Son of God. He is about to deliver the Sermon on the Mount, a discourse that will echo through the centuries, challenging empires and transforming hearts. But what makes this sermon so special? Why, even after two millennia, does it still resonate powerfully in our ears and hearts? Today, I invite you on an enlightening journey where we will explore the revolutionary teachings that Jesus shared on that distant hill, teachings that continue to shape lives and inspire those who seek truth and justice. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. With these words, Jesus initiated a spiritual revolution, a complete inversion of conventional notions of power and happiness. But what does it really mean to be poor in spirit? Prepare yourself for an answer that might challenge everything you thought you knew about success and contentment. You might be wondering, why should I care about such an ancient sermon? This is a legitimate question. So let me guide you through the reasons why the Sermon on the Mount is not just a historical account, but a vibrant and active revolution whose echoes are still felt. A message that transcends time and offers profound insights into the human condition and our relentless quest for greater meaning. Visualize a place where forgiveness supplants retaliation, compassion dominates selfishness, and love triumphs over hatred. Does it seem like an unattainable fantasy? This is precisely the worldview that Jesus presented in the Sermon on the Mount. He not only shared this vision, but also equipped us with the necessary tools to make it a reality. In a world torn by conflicts and deep divisions, the Sermon on the Mount emerges as a revolutionary manifesto. It proposes a way of living that has the power to mend broken bonds, infuse peace into desperate situations, and transform entire societies. Here we are not dealing with intangible theories, but with practical principles that have transformed countless lives over the centuries. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth, but I tell you, do not resist an evil person. With these challenging words, Jesus redefined the concept of justice and moral behavior, proposing a radically new path of human interaction and connection with the divine. Now let's immerse ourselves in the depths of this powerful sermon. It all begins in the book of Matthew chapter 5 verses 1 and 2, where Jesus, seeing the crowds, ascends the mountain, and sitting down, his disciples gather around him. In this sacred moment, he begins his monumental lesson, one that challenges our perceptions and promises to expand our horizons on what is moral, possible, and spiritually inspiring. Imagine the scene, a hill, a diverse crowd gathered, all eager to hear the words of a man calmly sitting before them, ready to share truths that would resonate for millennia. Jesus, in the posture of a teacher, begins the Sermon on the Mount with the Beatitudes, powerful statements that start by declaring someone blessed or happy. However, make no mistake, these are not mere motivational phrases. They constitute a profound redefinition of what it means to be truly blessed or happy. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5, verse 3. Wait, what? Poor in spirit. This seems to contradict everything modern society tells us about success and happiness. Here, we are not talking about material poverty, but about recognizing our spiritual neediness. Admitting that we need God is the first step to experiencing the kingdom of heaven here and now. Jesus continues, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted." Matthew 5, verse 4. In a world that exhorts us to always be happy and quickly overcome our losses, Jesus validates our pain. He assures us that it is okay to cry, that mourning is an integral part of the human experience, promising comfort. It is not an invitation to pessimism, but a recognition that sadness is part of human life and that God accompanies us in our suffering. Moving forward in the Beatitudes, we encounter this gem: blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Matthew 5, verse 5. In a world that values the aggressive and the dominant, this statement seems contradictory. However, Jesus directly challenges the idea that only the strongest survive. Meekness is not weakness, but controlled strength. It is the ability to respond with love, even under provocation, to have the power to retaliate, but choose not to. It is like a powerful tamed horse, all that immense strength, yet under control. And then comes, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Matthew 5, verse 6. Jesus is not referring to a mere superficial desire for improvement. He speaks of a deep, visceral yearning, comparable to physical hunger and thirst, a true call to action. It is not enough to simply wish for a more just world. We must actively work to create it. But Jesus does not stop there. He continues, "Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy." Matthew 5, verse 7. In a world that often cries for revenge and delights in the downfall of the mighty, Jesus invites us to choose compassion. Mercy here is not just a feeling, it is an active decision to forgive, even when we have every reason to hold a grudge. Next comes one of the most touching declarations, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." Matthew 5, 8. This transcends external appearances. Jesus speaks of integrity, being the same person both in public and in private. He calls us to authenticity in a world full of masks and pretensions. As we advance in the Sermon on the Mount, we encounter one of Jesus' most challenging teachings. You have heard that it was said, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. Matthew 5, verses 38 and 39. Wow, wait. Is Jesus suggesting that we should be passive and allow mistreatment? Not exactly. What he proposes is a revolution in human relations, challenging the culture of retaliation both of his time and ours. It is a call to respond to hatred with a quiet strength, a strength that has the power to transform hearts and minds, challenging the logic of aggression with the subversive ethic of love. In an environment often dominated by the logic of retaliation, the ancient law of eye for eye, tooth for tooth, serves as a cruel reminder of our tendency towards balancing through vengeance. But in this context, Jesus radically interrupts this expectation. He proposes an alternative, turn the other cheek. This gesture does not suggest submission or weakness, but represents a powerful and deliberate choice to break the cycle of violence. It is a revolutionary act of affirming that the sequence of retaliations does not continue with you. More deeply, Jesus challenges us with one of the most difficult precepts: love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Matthew 5, 44. This radical command challenges not only common logic, but also our deepest instincts. It not only asks for a complete turnaround in our usual emotional responses, but also redefines the concept of morality and goodness. Jesus justifies this unusual guidance by relating it to the nature of God, that you may be children of your Father in heaven, who shows benevolence equally to the wicked and the good, making his sun rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Matthew 5, 45. The idea is to encourage compassion that transcends conventions and reflects God's indiscriminate generosity. In the continuation of the sermon, Jesus addresses a practice deeply rooted in the human condition: judgment. Do not judge, or you too will be judged, in Matthew 7, verse 1. He warns, attacking directly the often hypocritical nature of our moral judgments. He illustrates his point with a visual and impactful metaphor. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Matthew 7:3. This image not only highlights the ridiculousness of criticizing small flaws in others while major faults mark our own being, but also uses humor to accentuate the importance of self-examination. Jesus invites us to reflect first on our own imperfections before pointing out those of others, promoting an approach that values humility and compassion over an attitude of moral superiority. This teaching not only discourages hasty judgment, but also guides us to cultivate empathy, recognizing our own fallibility when dealing with others. Jesus then follows with one of his most famous and essential teachings. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets, Matthew 7:12. This instruction is known as the Golden Rule, and its simplicity is revolutionary. Unlike the notion of simply avoiding doing harm, do not do to others what you do not want them to do to you. This rule pushes us further, challenging us to be proactive in doing good. It calls us to active empathy, to put ourselves in the place of the other and reflect, how would I want to be treated in this situation? And from that reflection, act accordingly. Next, Jesus addresses a universal aspect of human experience, anxiety. He instructs, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Matthew 6:25. Before interpreting this as a promotion of irresponsibility, it is crucial to understand that Jesus is not discouraging planning or work. Rather, he is confronting the paralyzing anxiety that often dominates our lives. To illustrate his point, Jesus uses beautiful examples from nature. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Matthew 6:26. And he continues about clothing. And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. Matthew 6 verses 28 and 29. With these comparisons, Jesus is not promoting passivity, but inviting us to trust in a loving Father who cares for us more fervently than he cares for birds and flowers. He concludes this segment with a directive that redirects our perspective and priorities. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Matthew 6:33. Jesus challenges our tendency to believe that everything depends solely on our efforts, reminding us that by placing our spiritual priorities first, earthly needs will find their place. This segment of the Sermon on the Mount represents a true revolution in priorities. Jesus challenges us to redefine our most fundamental values, putting God first, seeking His will and righteousness, and trusting that He will take care of our needs. This call is an invitation to rethink not just our actions, but the essence of our desires and the direction of our lives. As we move forward, Jesus addresses a theme with which we all deal daily, our relationship with material possessions. He warns us, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. Matthew 6, verses 19 and 20. Here, Jesus is not condemning the possession of goods, but urging us to consider where we truly place our value and energy. How often do we find ourselves obsessed with the next big purchase, the latest gadget, the newest car, or the latest fashion? There is no harm in enjoying material things, but Jesus invites us to look beyond these temporary satisfactions. He intensifies this teaching with a powerful statement, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Matthew 6:21. With these words, Jesus reminds us that our investments reveal much about who we are. What we value has the power to shape our identity and destiny. And then, Jesus culminates this part of his sermon with a definitive declaration about the incompatibility of divided allegiances. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money, Matthew 6:24. This is a call for a clear choice, emphasizing that divided loyalty between the spiritual and the material is unsustainable. The choice proposed by Jesus is not just a matter of preference, but a matter of total and exclusive dedication to what we consider supreme. He challenges each of us to deeply consider to whom or what we are truly serving in our daily lives. Jesus clarifies that the problem is not money itself, but the excessive love for it. This obsession with material possessions can dominate us, influence our decisions, and direct the course of our lives. When we allow this to happen, there is no room left for God in our lives, as materialism demands a devotion that excludes other devotions, including the spiritual. We now move on to one of the most iconic sections of the Sermon on the Mount, the Lord's Prayer. Jesus instructs, "This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name." Matthew 6:9. Pause for a moment and consider how revolutionary it is to begin a prayer with our Father. At that time, the culture saw God as a distant and fearsome being, but here, Jesus teaches us to address him as a loving and accessible Father. This completely transforms our relationship with the divine. He continues, "Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven," Matthew 6, verse 10. This line of the prayer goes beyond being just a beautiful verse. It represents a radical commitment to submission and a desire for God's will, not ours, to prevail in our lives and the world. It is a declaration that we wish for the principles and order of God to manifest in our daily reality. Then Jesus instructs us to ask, "Give us today our daily bread," Matthew 6, verse 11. It is interesting to note the choice of words, "our bread, not my bread." Even in our most basic needs, we are reminded that we are part of a community, and our prayers should reflect this interconnectedness. He continues, "And forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors," Matthew 6, verse 12. This part is challenging because Jesus directly links the forgiveness we receive from God with the forgiveness we offer to others. He is establishing a clear reciprocity. We cannot expect to be forgiven if we refuse to forgive. And he concludes, "And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one," Matthew 6, verse 13. Jesus deeply understands that human life is filled with struggles, temptations, and adversities. In his wisdom, he teaches us to depend on God, seeking his protection and deliverance. The Lord's Prayer, with its simplicity and depth, covers all aspects of human life, serving not only as a model of how to pray, but also of how to live a balanced life centered on spiritual values. Moving forward in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus touches on a common and universal theme, worry and anxiety. He advises, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes?" Matthew 6:25. This is a significant challenge, especially in a world where we are constantly bombarded with reasons to worry, from bills to pay to deadlines to meet and relationships to manage. But it is crucial to note that Jesus is not promoting irresponsibility. He does not suggest abandoning planning or work. Rather, he addresses the paralyzing anxiety that can completely dominate us. To illustrate his point, Jesus draws on beautiful examples from nature. "Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they?" Matthew 6:26. This rhetorical question invites us to reflect on our own faith and trust in God's provision. Consider for a moment, have you ever seen a bird panicking about where it will find its next meal? Of course not. They live in a state of natural trust, instinctively knowing that the necessities of life will be provided. They do not hoard, nor do they despair. They simply trust and continue their daily activities. Jesus expands the discussion on material anxiety with a reflection on worry about clothing, pointing to the lilies of the field. "See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. Matthew 6, verses 28 and 29. Again, he reminds us that he is not encouraging passivity, but rather trust in a loving Father who intensely cares for us, much more than birds and flowers. This trust challenges our human tendency to believe that everything depends exclusively on our effort and control. The following is a powerful conclusion: but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Matthew 6:33. This guidance establishes a radical transformation of priorities. Jesus does not promise riches or a life free of problems. Instead, he offers an invitation to live with an eternal perspective, trusting in a God who loves us deeply and cares for us. As we approach the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus concludes with a powerful analogy illustrating the importance of applying his teachings. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. Matthew 7, verses 24 and 25. This metaphor highlights not only the solidity of Jesus' teachings, but also the need for action and practical application. It is observed that Jesus does not say it is enough to hear or agree with his words, or even memorize them. He emphasizes that those who truly benefit from his wisdom are those who hear and, crucially, practice them. The emphasis is on the practical application of these teachings in our daily lives, a call to transform knowledge into action, ensuring stability and strength to face the storms of life with resilience and faith. Jesus complements his teaching with a striking contrast, describing the fate of those who hear his words but choose not to practice them. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. Matthew 7, verses 26 and 27. The message is unmistakably clear. It is not enough to merely hear or know the teachings of Jesus. It is essential to live them and continually apply them in our lives, our decisions, and our relationships. Interestingly, in both analogies, the house on the rock and the house on the sand, the storm comes to both. Jesus does not promise a life free from difficulties for those who follow his teachings. The crucial difference lies in the ability to remain firm amid the storms of life. This final part of the Sermon on the Mount serves as a call to action. Jesus exhorts us not to be mere listeners, but active practitioners, allowing these truths to shape who we are and how we live. Thus, we conclude our exploration of the Sermon on the Mount, starting with the Beatitudes that subvert our conventional notions of happiness and success, moving through teachings on forgiveness, loving enemies, prayer, judgment, and managing anxiety. Now the crucial question remains: what will we do with all this? How will we allow these words to transform our lives? How will we build our lives on this solid rock? The challenge is clearly laid out, and the choice is entirely ours. May we not only hear but practice, not only know but live. For it is in the practice that the true transformative power of the Sermon on the Mount resides. Now let us take a step back and consider the bigger picture, reflecting on how these principles can profoundly influence our personal and collective trajectory. The Sermon on the Mount transcends being merely a compendium of rules or moral principles. It is a vibrant invitation to a radically new way of life. Jesus calls us to a revolution of the heart, highlighting a stark contrast between the values he taught and those prevalent in the world. Consider these differences. The world often operates under the principle of retaliation, eye for eye. In contrast, Jesus instructs, turn the other cheek. While the world teaches us to love our friends and hate our enemies, Jesus proposes, love your enemies. And while many strive to accumulate earthly riches, Jesus advises us to store up treasures in heaven. He presents us, therefore, with a way of living that in the eyes of the world may seem madness, but which in truth is the path to true life, freedom and peace. Living according to these precepts is not an easy task. It is a daily challenge that requires swimming against the current of social and cultural norms. It means choosing love where hatred would be easier, forgiving where revenge seems more justifiable, and practicing generosity where selfishness might be more convenient. However, Jesus assures that though arduous, this path leads to abundant life. He encourages us, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Matthew 7, verses 13 and 14. This is the heart of the Sermon on the Mount, a call to a different, transformed life that reflects the character of God. It is an invitation to be salt and light in a world that often seems bland and dark. How, then, can we apply these teachings in our daily lives? Take, for example, Jesus's teaching on loving enemies. He not only suggests that we should love them, but also that we should pray for those who persecute us, Matthew 5:44. Loving our enemies and praying for those who persecute us might seem like an impossible task, an almost supernatural demand that Jesus places upon us. However, if we approach this by starting with small gestures, we may find it is not as unattainable as it appears. Imagine, for instance, that when provoked in traffic, instead of reacting with anger or rude gestures, you choose to say a brief prayer for the other driver. Lord, bless that driver. Perhaps they are having a difficult day. Think also about the workplace, where conflicts are common. If there is a colleague who always seems to be against you, imagine the difference it could make if, instead of retaliating, you choose to extend a hand, help with a project, or even offer a simple, sincere smile. Jesus challenges us not to approve of wrong behavior, but to respond to evil with good, to break the cycle of hatred and retaliation. Regarding the teaching on not judging others, this does not prevent us from discerning right from wrong. What Jesus proposes is that we approach others with humility and compassion, recognizing that we all have flaws. The next time you find yourself judging someone harshly, pause and try to understand the circumstances that might have led that person to act that way. Putting yourself in their shoes and considering how you would act in the same situation can profoundly transform how we see and treat others. Speaking now about worry and anxiety, common areas of challenge for many, Jesus advises, therefore do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own, Matthew 6:34. He is not saying to ignore planning for the future, but rather not to let anxiety paralyze us or steal the peace of the present. Putting Jesus's teachings into practice can start with simple, intentional actions in daily life. An effective way to cultivate a positive and grateful spirit is to start each day with a moment of gratitude. Before even getting out of bed, try to think of three things you are grateful for. This small exercise can help set a positive tone for the day and reinforce awareness of the blessings you already have. When anxiety arises, and it certainly will, a practical method to deal with it is to pause for a moment and breathe deeply. Ask yourself, is this worry something I can control? If the answer is yes, create an action plan to address the issue. If the answer is no, try to hand over that worry to God in prayer. Remember what Jesus said about the birds of the air. They do not sow, reap, or store away, yet the Heavenly Father feeds them. Matthew 6:26. Let this truth reinforce the notion that you are valued, loved, and cared for by God. Incorporating the Lord's Prayer into your daily routine can also be transformative. More than simply reciting the words, meditate on each phrase. Remember that you have a Heavenly Father who loves you. When you say, "Your kingdom come," commit to living according to the values of God's kingdom that day. When you ask for our daily bread, trust that God will provide for your essential needs. Regarding the issue of temptation, the Sermon on the Mount addresses it directly and at times uncomfortably. Jesus says, for example, that if your right eye causes you to stumble, it is better to gouge it out, Matthew 5:29. Of course, Jesus is not suggesting literal self-mutilation. He uses hyperbole to emphasize the seriousness with which we should treat sin and the importance of being willing to take drastic measures to avoid it. To truly live out the principles presented in the Sermon on the Mount, it is crucial to identify what often leads us to fall into temptation. This can range from problematic digital habits to social interactions that steer us away from our values. Jesus advises a radical approach to confronting these sources of temptation. For instance, if you frequently find yourself tempted by inappropriate content on the internet, consider installing blocking software as an effective measure. If there are people in your social circle who consistently encourage you to make bad choices, it might be time to reconsider those connections. These decisions can be difficult and involve giving up things we enjoy, but they are crucial for maintaining spiritual integrity and purity. Remember, we do not face these challenges alone. Jesus encourages us to seek divine help through prayer. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one, Matthew 6:13. This is a powerful tool that connects us with God and strengthens our resilience against temptations. The importance of our words is also a central theme in Jesus's teaching. He warns about the consequences of careless speech. But I tell you that everyone will have to give account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. Matthew 12:36. This highlights the weight and impact of our words. A practical application of this teaching is to try a week of abstaining from gossip, committing to not speak ill of anyone. Instead, seek ways to use your words to uplift and motivate others. Regarding honesty in our communications, Jesus instructs us to speak with clarity and integrity. But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Matthew 5 verses 34 and 37. This advice encourages us to avoid exaggerated promises and to speak in a direct and truthful manner, promoting transparency and trust in our interactions. The focus of Jesus's message on oaths goes beyond formality. He highlights the importance of integrity in our words. Being a person whose word is trustworthy to the point of not needing to reinforce it with oaths demonstrates strong and upright character. In practice, this translates to honoring commitments, being transparent even in difficult situations, and having the humility to admit mistakes instead of masking them with more excuses. As Jesus taught, the mouth speaks what the heart is full of, Matthew 12:34. Therefore, maintaining a heart full of love, compassion, and truth is essential for communication that not only honors God, but also blesses those around us. The issue of judgment is also crucial in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus warns us, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." Matthew 7, verses 1 and 2. While it may seem that he is telling us never to make moral judgments, the true teaching is a warning against hypocrisy. He challenges us to avoid the tendency to criticize the faults of others while ignoring our own flaws. Jesus uses a powerful metaphor to illustrate this hypocrisy. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Matthew 7, verse 3. It is a visual reminder of how ridiculous our behavior can be when we criticize minor flaws in others without acknowledging our own significant defects. To apply these principles in our daily lives, here are some practical suggestions. First, practice self-reflection. Before pointing out the faults of others, examine your own heart. Ask yourself if you might be committing the same mistake or something similar. Second, cultivate empathy. When you catch yourself judging someone, try to understand the circumstances that may have led that person to act that way. Remember the times when you also needed understanding and grace. Third, address mistakes with humility and love. When it is necessary to confront someone, do so with the goal of restoration, not condemnation. Adopt what psychologists call compassionate curiosity. Instead of judging, question what might be going on with that person and how you can help. Jesus does not forbid us from discerning right from wrong. He calls us to approach others and ourselves with humility, compassion, and grace. This is the essence of living according to the principles of the Sermon on the Mount.